Blog Talk Radio.
Mike coming to you here on I guess we're calling it Aaron Nola night here around the Philadelphia region from where we broadcast from, because, well, that's all anybody can seem to talk about as young 22-year-old pitcher who's been compared to Greg Maddux will take the mound for the first time here for the Philadelphia Phils. And I guess we'll see how that's going to be going. You can bet we're going to probably get into a little bit of that conversation here tonight, I would think. In fact, there's quite a bit on the agenda here that has the Phillies name on it. I don't know why, but, it does. And we'll get into a lot of that. We're also going to be getting into a lot of the other things that are happening in around Major League Baseball as we've just come back from the All-Star break. Yeah, just a couple of games into it now as we resumed live play only last Friday after a extended All-Star break. So, we're going to get into all those kinds of things. We're coming up on a trade deadline. Well, that could, I think there's probably going to be some conversation about that. I've got a couple of suggestions on what we can do with the trade deadline. I got some suggestions on what my Phils can do as well. One of them is not close up shop. Not yet. Anyhow, let me get in our usual guys. Sean is jumping in here with me. Sean, I think this is, what, your fourth week in a row on the program. I got to be careful here because I'm worried you're going to be asking for overtime pay from me, and I know that the union is probably going to look down on that if you're putting in too much time. Huh?
Hey, I'm doing it for the fun of it. It's not about the pay here. So, I'm loving it.
I don't know, man. Your agent is going to be not going to be too happy with that. I don't know. I think Nick might have something to say about it. Nick, are you here for the money or for the fun?
Oh man, I'm here for the fun. But if you want to double my pay and keep it at zero, I'd be fine with that.
Both you guys need new agents. I got to work on that. It's Aaron Nola night here, folks. And everybody out there who's not in Philadelphia is going, what? Who in the world is Aaron Nola? I've got the game on behind me, muted, so in the studio here. I don't know if anybody else has got access to it as well. And I'll be trying to watch the live scoreboard here as we go along to see. Try to keep on top of what Aaron Nola is doing. I'll tell you what, though. Let's do this. Let me borrow Caleb's sports machine.
Tonight, through the use of the sports machine,
we'll jump around here and take a look at what else is happening. Yes, the Philadelphia Phils will be starting a game off here shortly. Hey, guys, they're winners of four in a row. Where in the world did that come from? I guess it's just a little bit of the luck of the schedule. I mean, three games against the Marlins, and now we're playing against this Tampa Bay team that just has gone straight down the toilet in the past couple of weeks. I can't believe it. But that game will be kicking off here shortly. The Tampa Bay Rays are visiting the Philadelphia Phils at Citizens Bank Park. The Baltimore Orioles are up in New York to take on the Yankees. That should be a good one. We got the Mets down in Washington to take on the Nationals. That should be a good one. Mariners are in Detroit to play the Tigers. Atlanta Braves are hosting the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the Cincinnati Reds are hosting the Chicago Cubs. So those are all games that are about to get underway. There were no afternoon games today. So there you have it. Let's take a look real quick. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it because there really wasn't all that much movement. But over in our power rankings, our USA Today power rankings, as I pointed out, now I don't know if anybody wants to jump in on anything that's jumping off the page. Like I said, there wasn't much movement because we've really only had a couple of games since we came back from the All-Star break. But they're looking at the Baltimore Orioles moved up one spot. They're now ranked 12th. Arizona Diamondbacks dropped one. They're now ranked 18th. Who cares about the Arizona Diamondbacks? Let's get that one straight. When I'm looking at the standings, though, gentlemen, I'm going to leave the AL East alone because Frank was talking about them. And actually, I think it's starting to shake down now. I really do start to think that the AL East is shaking down. And this is starting to look more and more like it's the Yankees division. As I just pointed out, Tampa Bay has tumbled. They're now 47-48, so they're one game under 500. Toronto is exactly 500. Baltimore is virtually almost 500 at 46-45. The Yankees 50-41, 9 games over 500. It seems to me that this is really the Yankees division now to run away with. Let's jump down to the AL West, where the Angels suddenly have really gotten themselves on track, and they're winners of 5 in a row. All along now, a lot of people have been, we have watched the Houston Astros take off in that division all season long. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of marveling about this Houston Astros team. 3-7 now, Houston, in their last 10, albeit, let's back it up, because I think some of that is a little bit misleading because we did have a four-day All-Star break in there. But I throw it out there as a question. Are the Astros now – has it taken to midseason for the Astros now to kind of come back down to earth? Anybody want to jump in on that one? And is it the Angels now that are taking over this division? I don't know. Any speculation?
I think before we declare Houston coming back down to earth, first of all, they're still doing really, really well in terms of the rest of the league. But I think it's more the Angels have outperformed Houston recently. This kind of, made this impact on the AOS. I don't know if we've seen enough to say, yes, this is how the rest of the season is going to go. But I also don't think – well, let me rephrase that. I do think that Houston could be one of the biggest buyers at the deadline. So before – at least me personally, before I declare anything about whether I think Houston's on the up or the downward trend, I think it'll be really, really interesting to see how they play out the second half of this month and the moves they make. Today there was big, big news about how they're really, really interested in Cole Hamels. They're interested in adding a big bat in the middle of their lineup, a starting pitcher. If it's not Cole Hamels, maybe if David Price is available, maybe Johnny Cueto. They're not even looking to fill holes. They're just looking to add talent in any way they can. So I think if they are able to get that done in this last week and a half or so of July, then everything we're seeing now about maybe Houston kind of falling apart gets completely reversed. So I think the back half of this AL West season really, really depends on how this trade deadline goes. But if to be made, I don't think Houston would exactly fall out of the playoff picture, but I'd have to imagine that the Angels, as they're heating up, between Trout and Pujols, who are just absolutely dominating, they both have 28 home runs, which both lead the league in home runs, which is ridiculous to have in the middle of your lineup. But I just think if Houston doesn't make a move, the Angels absolutely have what it takes to take the division away from Houston.
If the season were to end right now today, Houston would be wild card number one. Minnesota would be wild card number two. Interesting points you make there, Nick, and we will get into in this program. We're going to get into a little bit of chat, obviously, about the trade deadline. Now, over in the I'm just looking it over. I was looking it over actually pre-show. I don't even want to go anywhere near, I think, at this point right now, the NL East. It's that's coming down to a two-horse race, and that's going to be Washington and the Mets, and I frankly think Washington's the better team there. Of course, that's not to say that the Mets, as we're talking about, and we can get into that conversation in a bit here, that's not to say that the Mets might not be buyers at the trade deadline. But if you jump down to the NL West, the Dodgers certainly now, I guess, kind of like the New York Yankees of the AL East, the Dodgers now certainly are starting to look like they're the ones that are in control of that division. Any observation on that, Sean?
No, I'd have to agree with you. I think the Dodgers are probably going to end out the rest of the season on top. I don't see anyone making any huge moves come trade deadline or for the rest of the season that will throw the Dodgers out of first place. So I definitely have to agree with you there that I think they're gonna stay on top.
National League observations, Nick?
National League observations, not many. I mean, you look at the standings.
How about those Phillies?
Well, the Phillies are on pace for 100 wins if they keep up the second half pace. Especially with the All-Star break within the last week, there hasn't been much of a change. I do think it's interesting, though, that I feel like the best teams in the majors are in the NL, but at the same time, the worst teams, because it's going to be an interesting deadline, and I know you said we'll get to this later, but I think probably 80% of the league is a legitimate buyer at this point.
I do, too.
There's a lot of teams that are still in contention across both the AL and the NL, but I feel like the AL East, Central, and West are a lot tighter than the NL East, Central, and West. And I not that, you know, any one of these teams is really that far ahead. Any first-place team in all of the bigs is really that far ahead, but I think you'll see more sellers come out of the NL than you will in the AL.
More sellers out of there. I'm sorry, did you say more sellers out of the which one?
The NL. The
NL.
Colorado, Milwaukee,
I might agree with
Cincinnati,
you.
Philadelphia.
I was gonna say maybe. Well, I don't think so though. I was gonna say maybe San Diego, but I doubt it now at this point. I mean, they've won five in a row, but I think they're probably. But Chicago certainly could be a buyer, I would think. Before we get into our full agenda for this evening, let me just jump over to the Aaron Nola thing, because I just want to bring that not up to date, but it is kind of, to me, I think it is somewhat surprising that the Phils have made the choice to bring him up, and you got to wonder whether some of it is perhaps maybe fan-driven. It's no secret that the Philadelphia Phils now are missing their attendance. Attendance is off dramatically, not surprisingly. I think I heard somebody mention that they're on average at this point right now to be pulling in, I don't know, something like maybe 13, 14,000 fans a game. That's it. Aaron Nola is 22 years old. He was 7-3 in how many games appearances? I'm trying to see how many. He was 7-3 in Double A Reading this year. 7-3.
I think it's 12 games.
12 games. You're correct. Yeah, there it is. Games started 12. 3-1 in Triple A. I mean, all right, fine. If we want to look at the minor league record just for this season, and you combine the two of them, all right, we're 10-4. I don't know, is 3-1 six games in Triple A, is that enough of a sampling? Nick, what's your thinking? I mean, should we really be sitting on the edge of our seat saying this guy might be the next Greg Maddux?
Well, it's funny because over the last week, I've been asking pretty much, or at least a lot of the baseball friends that I have that religiously follow either baseball or the Phillies, what to expect from Aaron Nola, because we drafted him not long ago, and we drafted him knowing that his ceiling is a 2 and his basement's a 3. He's going to be a, you know, kind of like that 2.5 type pitcher, but the reason he was 7th overall and the reason we drafted him is because of all the pitchers in that draft, he had the quickest path to the majors. But now, all of a sudden, and I can't tell if it's the hype comes from just the desperation of looking to for some kind of hero to come through, or if he's really just proven himself, but now he's coming up and the expectations are he's going to be the ace. He's going to be, you know, a great pitcher. Hamels is going to leave and he's going to be the number one. He's going to be the pitcher of the future. And it just changed quickly, and so quickly that I don't think people even realize that when we drafted him, again, not long ago, an ace wasn't even, I don't want to say it wasn't even within the realm of possibility, but it was very unlikely. There was no expectation that he would ever be an ace, and now he comes up and we've got high expectations for him. I thought his numbers in Double A were fantastic. In Triple A, though, you bring up a good point. I think they weren't bad, per se, but there was nothing fantastic about Triple A. I think, though, I do think they're right in calling him up. I don't have an issue with them calling him up for many reasons, and you know, we could touch on that in a little bit, but I just want to get this out there and then let you and Sean kind of come back to this, is I can't tell if all this hype is because Philadelphia is so desperate for a hero or because he's really, really proven himself. Because, again, we can look at numbers, but I'm a firm believer that pitching statistics in the minor leagues are very skewed and not a great predictor. But when you look at his stuff, I mean, they talk about he doesn't have great stuff. He doesn't have the stuff Jesse Biddle might have. He doesn't throw, you know, excessively hard, but he has fantastic control. But I even look at it, the ball's on a string, and he's just pulling it. I think he's got the stuff to be a really, really good pitcher. But again, I'm hesitant because I don't want to fall victim to any of these fans that, and I'll repeat this because this is the best way I can put it, any of these fans that expect him to be an ace because they're desperate for a hero. Because again, I'll reiterate for the final time, that was not at all an expectation from this guy until very recently.
Yeah, really. I excellent points. You're absolutely right. When I, you know, I remember when he was drafted, and believe it or not, folks, it was just back in June of last year. I mean, June 2014, that's it. And this is what this guy's, I mean, it's just been an incredible shot up the board here with this guy. I do remember when he was drafted that there was a lot of hype, a lot of talk, a lot of expectation that the guy was probably going to be one of the future starters for the Philadelphia Phillies. But you're absolutely right, Nick. It wasn't the kind of thing where this was going, you know, that I didn't even hear comparisons made to him of Hamels, you know. But now suddenly the comparisons today I'm hearing are, oh, he looks like Greg Maddux. Oh, come on, please, seriously? I mean, you know, I guess I gotta be wowed tonight, you know. And I'm just turning around right now to see where we are on this game. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Aaron Nola, Sean?
See, I like the way Nick put it. I think a lot of this hype for, you know, like this savior, Aaron Nola, the new ace of the Philadelphia Phillies, I think it's coming a lot from the fact that, you know, like the Phillies fans are disappointed with the way the season's going and they're looking to someone to kind of fix things. But I don't necessarily think that that's the way that you should look at this. I mean, the season, we all know, like, no one's going to save this season. It doesn't matter what the Phillies do. This season is a bust. Like, they're going to end up with the worst record in baseball. So I don't think you can really look to this kid, 22 years old, and say that he's the ace of this team and is going to put us in a place where we're finally going to be in, like, playoff contention again or whatever. But the one thing I have always had a problem with the Phillies is the fact that I feel like they've had a knack of never bringing up their young guys to play in the majors, like give them playing time, especially when, you know, some of their older veterans were struggling, like the first couple seasons where we started seeing Howard struggle and Utley was injured and struggling. We didn't see a lot of these younger guys being brought up to play the game, you know, get some time in the majors and see what they did. So I don't think it's a bad idea to bring up Nola. Give him some time. Let him see what he's got up in the majors. If he really isn't ready, you can always send him back down. So, yeah, I think it's a it'll be interesting to see how tonight turns out for him. But I don't think it's a bad idea to have him there. But at the same time, I don't think the fans should be saying that this kid is going to save the Phillies. I mean, it's not going to happen. There needs to be more than just one guy, 22 years old, has never played a game in the league, who's just going to come here and all of a sudden, like, change the Philly season around.
You bring up one of the often brought up complaints about the Phils, and that is that they wait too long to bring their young prospects up. And as Nick's pointing out, you know, what's the motivation to take this? I mean, basically a young kid, he's 22 years old, only drafted a year ago. What's the rush in bringing him up after only six games appearing in AAA? Well, hey, you know, I throw out there, and I'm not saying it's absolutely the case. I don't know. I kind of like Nick's theory that, you know, it might be the hype thing. That might be it more. Or it might be, hey, let's put 30,000 seats, you know, let's put 30,000 bucks in the seats tonight. Or it might be, how about this one? It might be, well, you know, guys, we've got a bad reputation out there for not bringing our guys up soon enough. I mean, I'm trying to remember, Ryan Howard, if I'm not mistaken, was a rookie at what age? I think he was 26, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or 20, or something like that. I think he was in his mid-20s. So, you know, could it be, or maybe it's a combination of all of that. Because, you know, one of the things we've talked about with the Phils, this Phils team, is it's quite evident we're under new management here right now. I mean, this is a team under construction, under new management. So maybe there is a mindset thinking that's going on here, and that is that we're going to move our guys along a little quicker. I don't know. Go ahead, Nick, jump in.
I think that's all an excellent point and an absolutely excellent critique, an appropriate critique, is that these guys, they leave their prospects in the minors too long. It doesn't do you any good if they're 25 and sitting there at that point. I mean, it was just a couple of years ago we're talking about our prospects coming through. Even now, Cesar Hernandez, Cameron Ruff, these guys are 24, 25, 26 years old. They're no longer prospects. They're guys that might have a decent prime of their career at some point. They're not prospects at 26 years old. Aaron Nola is a guy that, you know, did we rush him or did we just bring him to the majors because he's ready enough and he can learn on the fly? Because there is nothing to lose at this point. It's, you know, you trade Papelbon, you stick Ken Giles in the closer role this year and let him adjust because there's nothing to lose at this point. You bring up guys like Franco. You give guys like Hernandez a chance. You give, hopefully, Aaron Altair will be up here within the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, we'll see maybe a little bit of J.P. Crawford in September. You let him learn on the fly when there's nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. At this point, by the time they're good, they will have major league experience under their belt. They will be, Aaron Nola will be in the prime of his career, 24, 25 years old, hopefully no older than 26. There's nothing wrong with bringing him up. And if he fails, he fails. But at least you know, and you don't have a Dom Brown situation where you've got a player, a five-tool right fielder, ready to come up. He's slugging the ball in Double-A. He's hitting the ball out of the Reading Phillies ballpark. He's slugging the ball in Triple-A. You bring him up, he has a decent month, maybe half the season. If you want to give him that, he makes the All-Star team, and he falls apart. And now he's, how old is he? High to late 20s, probably. He is. You could point at Dominic Brown and say that is why the Phillies failed because we depended our future on this top prospect. He didn't pan out. He messed up the lineup. He messed on the outfielder. And I'm not personally blaming specifically Dominic Brown, but I'm saying waiting on Dominic Brown to find out he's not a major league player or at least a good one or at least a starter is what held the Phillies back from progression because now they have nothing left to fall back on. If they had brought him up when he was 23, 24 years old, 22 years old even, however old he was, and he didn't do well, you could still give him 2-3 years, and still it wouldn't be too late. But at least you would know and you could adjust accordingly. If Aaron Nola doesn't pan out, they know. They can look to a guy like Jesse Biddle, like Adam Morgan, like Zach Eflin. They could look to add through free agency. They could say maybe we can't trade Cole Hamels because we don't have anybody else to back him up. Maybe that's another reason why he's up now, to see if we get rid of Hamels, do we have anybody else that can be an ace? There's nothing to lose with bringing him up, and you know. If you waited until he was 26 years old, he comes up, he doesn't do well, then you don't know, and you screwed up your future. If he does do well, you hit the jackpot.
I'm glad you brought up the Dominic Brown syndrome because I was I was going to before. You know, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. What was it? Let's see. Was it 4 years ago? I think it was 4 years ago. I will never forget his debut appearance that night. The hype that went into Dominic Brown coming up. And if it wasn't four, it was five. So it was either 2010 or 2011. 2010?
2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember the hype that night. I was excited. I mean, everybody was, that's all was, and it so reminds me of the hype that we have heard today, all surrounding Aaron Nola. So we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how it plays out, but I appreciate everybody's comments on it. Good stuff there. If anybody wants to jump in with us here tonight, please don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964. We want your calls. We want to get your thoughts on everything as we go through the evening. 347-826-9964. If you're listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, hit the little Skype button there. Put you through to us loud and clear. Chat room is open. We've got a little bit of activity there. Thank you. Otherwise, hit me up over on Twitter, at FratHouseMike. Let's shift it up. There's a couple of topics here that actually are left over from last week's program. We had such a good program last week and we got into so many different topics that we only got to maybe three items on the agenda. So there's a couple of items on this agenda that are kind of left over from last week and from All-Star Week. And one of those that I want to get into real quick here, again, since we're kind of talking a little bit of Philadelphia Phil stuff, I don't want to jump off the topic real quick here. I want to stay on it. We'll stay with it for a minute. I want to talk about Jonathan Papelbon. Jonathan Papelbon was the lone sole representative for the Philadelphia Phils on the All-Star team last Tuesday evening. Well, Jonathan Papelbon made all the blog sites in Philadelphia here last week. My goodness. Last week when he made some comments during Media Day on Monday. And I got a couple of minutes of his comments right here. I'm just going to play these real fast. There's only about 2 minutes worth of Jonathan Papelbon. This was Media Day last Monday, right before the All-Star Game. And this was his comments about the Philadelphia Phils and his status there, I guess.
You know, it's just that time where it's either you know what or get off the pot.
Yeah.
You said it, not me. You know, and I think it's just you can only stay in that limbo area for so long, and it's starting to become more of a necessity to move one way or the other, I think, for the Phillies organization.
So you would go anywhere? You have some veto, do you?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go anywhere. No,
oh, okay.
I'm not gonna go to a team that's
not. Well, nobody would.
Those Phillies.
Yeah, those teams wouldn't want you. Yeah, I mean, those teams wouldn't want you anyway, right?
I want to go to a contender. I feel like I'm to that point in my career where I've earned a no-trade clause and I've been able to get to that point, and I made a decision based on going to a Philadelphia Phillies team who won how many games, Jim? 112 or 102 games. So, I made that decision based on that. And I personally thought that I was going to come to Philly and get abused. I had a starting staff and a team that was hitting the leather off the ball, and I thought that I was going to come to Philadelphia and win two more rings. I honestly and truthfully did. And, the downward spiral happened, and it happened so quick, and this guy's seen most of it. It's almost unexplainable, besides the injuries and stuff like that, right?
Age,
yeah. But I think age plays a certain factor in there, but to me, I think you can still compete at a high level as older you are. But.
Now, some might argue that, well, no, okay, maybe he hasn't been abused, but he certainly has shelled out his share of abuse. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a. I wouldn't necessarily put myself in the corner of being a Papelbon fan. I guess I haven't been as. I guess I haven't been. Perhaps maybe. I was never necessarily even enamored with Brad Lidge or I liked Madsen, but yeah, I'm trying to think of a closer that I ever actually really, really was like, oh, yeah, that's the guy, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily a fan, but at the same time, his comments broke last week. These comments right here, some of them, broke last week. And, Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio was all a flutter with how dare he? What is this guy? Here he is again. He's dissing Philadelphia fans. He's dissing Philadelphia Phillies fans. I got to be honest with you. I didn't have a problem with what he said. I throw it out there. Anybody want to jump in? I don't have a problem with what Papelbon said there.
I'm going to agree with you, Mike. I don't have a problem with what he said either. I mean, he's a great closer. Probably definitely deserves to be on a team where he's going to be winning. I mean, as a Phillies fan, like, I'd love to see him get rid of him so that way he could, you know, join a team where maybe he could actually help somewhere. I mean, with the Phillies, he's been doing great. He's got, like, a 1.14 ERA. I think I was reading he had like 28 strikeouts in 23 innings pitched. He's a great pitcher. He's just not any help to the Phillies. So I think their best bet is to use him as a bargaining chip, trade him, get, you know, some potential prospects out of it if they can, and, you know, go from there.
Yeah, what are his numbers right now? His numbers right now, he's got a 1.72 ERA. He's appeared in 35 games.
These are probably old statistics that I was looking at.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know. These are coming from Baseball Reference, so I think these are actually, I think they keep these pretty up to date. He's appeared in 35 games. He's got 16 saves. Do his antics get on my nerves? Yeah, his antics get on my nerves. I like to refer to him as he's the Brizgalov of the Philadelphia Phils. That's kind of the way I like to describe him. But in this particular case, where everybody was screaming about his comments here last week, Philadelphia sports fans sometimes are a puzzlement to me. They'll diss their own teams. They'll do it themselves, but God forbid some team member come out and tell the truth, and suddenly they're all offended. You know, I don't know. Nick, any problem with Papelbon's comments?
Let's start from the beginning. So, Jonathan Papelbon I just want to break this down. Jonathan Papelbon is probably indisputably the best closer the Phillies have ever had. The numbers show it. His stuff shows it. His career numbers show it. His numbers with the Phillies show it. Best closer the Phillies have ever had. What good does that closer do you if you're not winning games? So not only is he a luxury that the Phillies can't afford at this point or last year or the year before, but let's rewind. He came to the Phillies in 2012. He was an all-star. I don't think much came to be around that year. 2013, June of 2013, or July of 2013, around the trade deadline, Papelbon implied or said that he didn't want to be in Philadelphia. Doesn't get traded. Plenty of offers on the table. 2014 comes around. The Phillies know that they're sellers. They're really not competitors. They're not going to be for a while. Jonathan Papelbon yet again insinuates he does not want to be playing in Philadelphia. Plenty of opportunities. They could have traded him when I think it was the Tigers lost their closer. They probably could have got something big in return. They waited. They held out. Tigers got somebody else. Pablo Bond doesn't get traded. It's now 2015, just about a week and a half before the trade deadline, and Jonathan Papelbon, again, for the third consecutive year, flat out tells the fans and the front office and everybody watching baseball that he does not want to be in Philadelphia. He wants to be pitching elsewhere. At what point does Amaro or any of the front office get the hint? So to answer your question, to your point, do I have a problem with him saying that? I think it's kind of arrogant to do that 3 years in a row. At this point, I've got no problem with it because it's nothing new. Nothing new from him, whether it's saying that he doesn't want to play in Philadelphia or just acting up, grabbing it, you know, between his legs as he's walking off the field, whatever it may be. But that's who Papelbon is. That's who he is. And we knew that coming in. And when he came to Philadelphia, I had this discussion with my brother and my dad. I said, I don't really like Papelbon. They're like, what, are you not going to root for him? I said, no, of course I'm going to root for him. He's on the Phillies. I just don't like him. I think he's kind of punky. I think he's got an attitude. And not an attitude like Ken Giles, but like an attitude just as a person, not even as a player. It shows now for the third consecutive year at the deadline saying he doesn't want to be here. So this year, I don't have a problem with it because he said it time and time again, and nothing's come of it. So why not say it again? What do you have to lose? What's going to happen? They're going to say, no, we can't deal with you. We're going to trade you. We're going to give you what you want. Okay, at that point, I get what I want. If not, nothing happened after 2013. Nothing happened after 2014. I bet you most fans don't even remember him saying things like that after 2013 and 2014. If he doesn't get traded this deadline, a lot of fans will forget he said all that this year. But
I don't know about that. I think fans have a long memory. I think they do remember. I think that's why he's really not all that. I don't think Papelbon's all that well liked by the Philadelphia fan base.
No, I don't think he's. I'm shocked he's still on the team.
Despite the fact that you're pointing out that he might be the best. He might be the best closer the Phillies have ever had.
Right, and he does things like this with which at this point I don't have a problem with it at all. Because he's done it before and nothing's come of it, so why not do it again? 2013, I had a bit of an issue with it. But when it all comes down to it, the answer is simple. Trade him. Not even because he doesn't want to be here, but you just don't need him and you can get something in return. And I think if he finishes 16 more games this year, he's guaranteed a 2016 year. So the contract isn't exactly set in stone for trade talks. We don't know if he's going to have an extra year, a guaranteed vesting year, or if this is going to be his final year. So it makes trade talks a little difficult, and I know he's highly overpaid, at least in my opinion. I don't think any closer should be paid $13 million. But the answer is simple. Just get rid of him. If he doesn't want to be here, get rid of him. There's no use to hanging on to him. We don't have any use for him. He's got 16 saves. We're more than halfway through the year. I mean, if the Phillies are in a save situation, if they blow 10 saves this year and have 15 losses because their closer can't finish the deal or whatever it may be, what's the difference between a 70-win team and a 55-win team? A higher draft pick?
I don't think he's had a blown save either, has he?
No, he hasn't this year, but I'm saying if you were to get rid of him and bring in somebody
I'm just saying I don't think I've seen him blow a save all season.
He's played the last 18.
What's his vesting option? His vesting option is what? 16 saves?
His vesting option. No, if he finishes 16 more games. So what I have in front of me says that 2016 option guaranteed with 55 games finished in 2015. Or 100 games finished in 2014 through 2015. He finished 52 games last year, and this year he has 32. So that 100 would come before the 55 this year. And that's 84, so 16 more games that he finishes, whether save or blown save. If he just finishes 16 more games, he's guaranteed 2016 for $13 million.
Oh, boy. I'm in agreement with you, Nick. We don't need him. And there's got to be a team out there As we pointed out going into this program, there are a lot of teams that potentially could be buying. We don't need him. There's got to be a team that needs a closer badly. I think I've already heard what. Did I hear the Cubs? Is that one of the teams that I heard mentioned, I think thrown around there? Was the Cubs might need a closer? Anyhow, there's got to be teams out there that are in the buying mode. I'd like to unload the salary, unload the attitude, and as you point out, get something for him. So I'll throw it out there as we start to think about moving into our trade deadline conversation. Is Jonathan Papelbon on the Philadelphia Phillies come August 1?
I hope not. But no, I don't think he will be either. I think they'll do something. They'll move him.
Yeah, I think they will too.
All right. So he won't be there. All right. Well, we'll see. To me, I always like to believe the longer you hold, the more you can get as you get closer and closer to the trade deadline. So we'll see how that goes. All right. So Papelbon may not be here. All right. Before I get into, as I pointed out, trade deadline discussion here, I'm going to be perfectly blunt. I usually am. I'm going to be honest. I did not see the home run derby. Nick, I'm hoping you did. Did you see it?
I did. I wouldn't have missed it after
I had a feeling if there was going to be anybody that was going to watch it, I had a feeling you would. Sean, did you see the home run derby?
I was not able to see it, no.
Okay. I didn't watch it either, and I'm going to be honest with you. Maybe it's just my age anymore. You know, there was a lot of talk and hype about, we're going to change the format. And we're going to do, well, we talked about it. I think, Nick, you were on with us the week before the All-Star game.
Yes.
And we were talking about how you needed a slide rule in order to figure out what the how this whole thing was going to work because, you know, just reading the new regulations and rules on it was so darn confusing, and it was all bracketed and all this other nonsense. I didn't watch it for a couple of reasons. One, I was like, I can't imagine that the rules are going to make it any more exciting or interesting than it has been. And frankly, I think the whole thing has become rather boring. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think Chris Berman lends itself to making it fresh. Let's put it that way. I'm sick of Chris Berman. I'm sick of ESPN's coverage of it, period. I'd love to see somebody else cover it. But apparently the word following the home run derby was, wow, it was a big hit. And apparently the ratings for it were dramatically up for this season versus previous years. So, Nick, since you're the only one here, unfortunately, and I feel like a bit of a fraud bringing something up on the air here that I didn't actually participate in myself, but since you're the only one that actually did get a chance to view it, well, give us your lowdown on it.
So I have to be honest, before I watched it, before it happened, I was very skeptical, very hesitant, but I did say that I would give it its fair chance, and I keep an open mind about it, but I just am not expecting to be, you know, very pleasantly surprised. I was wrong. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I thought it would be, when it first started in the first round, it was kind of almost like a circus act, and I didn't exactly like how the first round went, but in later rounds, it kind of all came together a little bit. I thought the bonus time is a silly idea. It seems like everybody got 30 seconds of bonus time anyway. If it were just go up and hit for 5 minutes, I would have been happier. I think it almost moved too quickly because there would be times they're showing the ball landing, and then before the ball lands, or as the ball lands, they cut away, and the next ball is already flying. And, you know, a lot of the home run derby, a lot of what people want to see is the swings. They want to see people swing. They don't just want to see the ball fly. I thought, you know, you still saw players take pitches, not nearly as many as they would. I'm just trying to think of a couple other. I didn't like the head-to-head. The head-to-head was interesting, but to me it would make more sense, just completely hypothetically, because I forget what the matchups were and I forget what the first-round results were. But if Manny Machado hits 9 home runs and he's going up against Jock Peterson, who hits 10 home runs, Machado is now out of the derby, even though maybe in another head-to-head matchup, Albert Pujols hit 3 and I'm forgetting his name, just whoever Albert Pujols is hitting against hits 4. Now Machado's out with 9 and that guy's in with 4. So to me, I didn't really like that, although it was kind of interesting because there was a little more competition between two individual hitters. But overall, I think the ratings were up for a few reasons. One, it was new. Whether it was good or bad, it was new, and people wanted to see it. They wanted to see what it would be like. So before I go ahead and I say this was a huge success, I'd like to see another year or two of this system. Although I will admit it was more of a success than I thought it would have been. Two, I think the ratings were up because it was, regardless of the formatting, regardless of the system, it was one heck of a derby. I mean, Todd Frazier in every single round played comeback kid in his hometown and then wound up winning the whole thing. He was down in the first round. he came all the way back. He was down in the second round. He came all the way back, and both times late on the clock. And then in the final round, it really, really looked like he wasn't it was a very difficult path for him to claim the title. He looked like he was starting to get hot, and then he didn't, and he really fell off. And with about a minute and a half left, 2 minutes, you thought it was over, and you thought Todd Frazier was out of it. And he comes back again, and he goes on a roll, and he wins the whole thing. So, again, I was very impressed by the Home Run Derby. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it would have been. I don't necessarily like it any better than the old Home Run Derby, although I understand why it would suffice, or it would satisfy, rather, it would satisfy a larger portion of the fan base, just because of the nature of this new format, and I'm okay with it. But I refuse to yet call it a huge success because of the new format. I think, like I said, I think the fact that Frazier put on a show in his hometown, playing comeback kid in all three rounds, that spiked up the ratings. I think just the fact that it was new, that spiked up the ratings. I mean, we just got done talking about the Phillies want to sell tickets, so they bring up Aaron Nola. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. tickets are going to stay up. That means people want to see Aaron Nola's debut and they want to see what this kid's about. And if he winds up stinking, then his second start isn't going to sell as many tickets. So similarly, I think in this Home Run Derby, I want to see a second year, a third year, maybe even a fourth year before I say, yes, this format is definitely better. I want to see a year where there's not as great of a storyline as what Todd Frazier did, a more boring Home Run Derby, see if it's still entertaining without that headline, without that storyline, without that plot behind it. So, but I do have to admit, and I will openly admit, it was much better than I thought. A lot of the critiques I had beforehand didn't seem to be either as bad or coming to play at all when the Home Run Derby actually took place. And I was impressed. I'll say I was impressed. But again, I don't want to get too high and mighty on this new format, and I definitely like to see a little bit more of it.
Okay, well, I'm making notes in the margins here. Mandatory viewing for next year from Nick. I got to watch. Okay, so next year I got to watch it. Gotcha.
Now, one of the points you brought up, Nick, about the, as far as the pitching situation was, this is something I was hearing from a lot of the people who actually watched the Derby, was the fact that, you know, the pitch couldn't be thrown until the ball hit the ground, whether it be in the field or out.
Right.
And I think as far as that's concerned, I feel like with that said, beforehand guys would pick people to pitch for them on, like, somewhat of a sentimental level,
right,
where you'd pick whoever to pitch for you. Like, you could pick your dad, you could pick a fellow player, like, you could really pick anyone. But now with this new rule, I feel like there needs to be a little bit of consistency with how the pitching is concerned, because I think, you know, putting certain guys on the mound for certain players, like, whereas before, you know, you could have whoever up there and you could take your time. Now that it's a timed thing, you know, one person could have an advantage over someone else depending on the person that they're picking to pitch for them. So, again, I mean, this is all just hearsay. I didn't watch it personally myself. But I do feel like if this is going to be the way the Home Run Derby remains, it's the first year, so obviously not everything is, you know, completely worked out. They still need to work out some kinks. But I feel like that is definitely one thing that they're going to have to keep a little more consistent. Like, maybe pick one, like, person to pitch the whole Derby.
Oh,
now,
I see.
Obviously, you know, like, you don't want to, like, throw a guy's arm out by, like, being out there all night. Like, maybe you pick a couple of guys. But, like, on a per-round basis, you should have the same pitcher pitching for every batter. So that way there's a little more consistent of, like, a pitching situation going on there.
Yeah,
because
I
was trying to figure out because the way you were describing it, I was going to say, well, wait a minute, how is that any different from the way that it was? That's exactly, while it wasn't timed, somebody could pick whoever they wanted, and that would have given them an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you could pick, you know, a professional pitcher to pitch for you, whereas someone else maybe picked, you know, like a family member who they wanted to be out on the field with them, and maybe that family member isn't as consistent of a pitcher as the major league pitcher who's going out on the mound for someone else.
Well, I remember the heartfelt story, you know, when Josh Hamilton did it, and it was his, I don't know, little league coach or something. And the guy was like, you know, 94 and a half years old or something. I don't know if you guys remember that, but.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think you're getting a fastball from the 94.5, you know, year-old guy.
Well, I think it's all, I mean, that's one of the points I made, is that now with the clock and everything, it's not just the hitter, but the pitcher comes into play and plays a much bigger role than in the old format. Just something to note, because I know you guys didn't see the Derby, but when I was watching the Derby with my family and a couple friends, one of the points that kept coming up was, wow, Albert Pujols' pitcher really, really stinks, and it's a shame, because Pujols did well, but his pitcher was definitely the worst in the field and probably held him back a little bit because he was forced to swing at bad pitches. That said, I think it would be interesting to see what Pujols would have done had he had better pitching or even the same pitching. I'm not saying he would have won the Derby or done any better. He might have done worse. I don't know. But it's just to add to the point, now the pitcher comes into play because they're not getting as good as pitches, or they're not getting pitches as quick. They're not getting as many pitches. They said time and time again, Frazier was getting however many swings each round. And I think each round, like he led the number of swings. It was close to 40 in each round, which is really impressive. But because of that, he was able to put up more home runs because he's taking more swings. But at the same time, a guy like Prince Fielder, who swings as hard as he can and isn't exactly in the best shape of the players in the field, if he's taking more swings, now all of a sudden he's tiring a lot quicker than a Manny Machado or a Todd Frazier would. So there's a lot more strategy behind it. But the pitcher, like you said, Sean, the pitcher comes into play to the point where I question how Pujols would have done. And it if that's the way the Derby's going to go from now on, we just adjust to it and we say, yeah, well, you know, it's part of the game. But being used to the way the Derby used to be, it's weird because now it's not just the home run derby. It's not just the hitter in the home run derby. It's the duo in the home run derby. The hitter and the pitcher should both be out receiving the trophy.
Interesting stuff there. I'm glad that they're – I'm going to put it to you this way. I'm glad that they addressed the staleness of the event. I think they began to realize that it had become a little bit boring, and I think stale is just, you know, exactly the right word. Even for an oldster like myself, a lot of times when you get those kind of stale events, the only people that are tuning in are people my age or older. So I'm glad they addressed it, you know, and obviously I will, you know, we're gonna jump in and check that one out. What's happening with Aaron Nolan, Nick?
He looked really good for the first two innings. He had 3 strikeouts, allowed no runs. Looked really good. And what's his name? I don't even know his name. Nathan Carnes comes to the plate, the Rays pitcher. And it might have even been the first pitch. It was really early in the bat.
Oh, no. Don't tell me.
Deep for, home run.
Get
out. The first hit of the Rays pitching staff. But Nola looks great. Gets to the pitcher. Of all people in line, gets to the pitcher.
Wait a minute.
Not even just a walk, not a single. He took him deep.
Wait
a
minute.
Left center field.
The pitcher?
Nathan Carnes, an AL pitcher, was the first to take Nola deep and the first to put a run on the board.
Got to be his first home run probably in his career. He's an American League pitcher.
I don't even know. That might have been one of his first at-bats.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, you know, we're worried
see
about
what
the
I can
kids.
Get for you.
We're worried about the kid's psyche. Holy smokes!
You can see it on his face. He's just kind of looking around, like, wait, what? He had this like look on his face, like, I can't believe I just did that. And I think what happened was kind of like an amateur rookie mistake. He got comfortable with the fact that a pitcher was in the box, maybe assuming an out. He threw a 2-seamer on the low inside corner, kind of went right at him, didn't really. Like you're supposed to handle a pitcher. You know, you're not supposed to mess around with a 9-hole hitter, but there's a strong possibility he may have just gotten too comfortable thinking, oh, he's a pitcher, I'll get him out. Made a mistake, went too easy, and the guy took him deep. But hopefully it's a learning experience because
bit
embarrassing.
Definitely a wake-up call, that's for sure.
Holy smokes. Well, you know, the poor kid said he was nervous going into the game. Man alive.
Welcome to the big leagues.
I would think he's not only nervous, he's probably a bit embarrassed.
This pitcher had 2 at-bats coming into the game. He was 0 for 5 career.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good things to come.
Oh, man alive. All right, on that note, we want the phones ringing. 347-826-9964. Jump in with us, please. 347-826-9964. Or jump in the chat room, leave us a comment there, or hit me up over on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. I got talking about this the other day, guys. I'm trying to remember where it was. It might have been on our Thursday flagship program, Frat House Sports. Or it might have been on my solo Saturday program, Frat House Saturday. But I remember, and this is what's really crazy when you start to think. Frat House Sports has been on the air now for 4 years. We're going to be hitting our fourth anniversary in September. And when we first came on the air, one of the many things that we talked about within our first year on the Frat House Sports Show, and both my co-host over there, Sidekick, and myself, were terribly, terribly opposed way back in 2011 to the prospect of the Major League Baseball bringing in a second wild card. We were completely opposed to it. I got to tell you, I've changed my tune because, as we have seen in the past couple of years, it certainly has made for the entire league to be a little more exciting a little bit longer into the season. Now, as we move into this whole trade deadline situation, and the trade deadline, of course, will be on July 31st, so we now have about 9 days remaining before the deadline itself. As we move into that direction, I just looked through both leagues. There is no less than at least 14 teams, in my mind, that are buyers. And there could actually be more because I didn't throw in some of the 500 teams. I don't think I threw Detroit into the mix, which is a 500 team right now. So there are at the very least, seven teams that could be buyers. And so my question is this. With the success of the wild card, the second wild card, does it not make sense, perhaps, to think about pushing the trade deadline back a week or maybe even two to the middle of August? And now you potentially will have more teams who will be buyers. Or sellers, rather. Any thoughts?
I think. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
No, Sean, you can go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, I think you bring up an interesting point there, Mike, in that, you know, having it right after the middle of the season maybe isn't the greatest thing because a lot of these teams are coming out of the All-Star break. Again, like, there are teams that struggle coming out of the All-Star break. We saw it with the Angels. The Angels are on a five-game winning streak. Sorry, Boston is on a five-game losing streak. But yeah, some of these teams aren't the greatest coming out, and maybe that would deter them from being a buyer coming out of the All-Star break. And they really only give them, you know, like a week and a half to kind of figure out the finalization of what they want to do. So pushing it back a couple weeks. You know, maybe a team finds that they come back at a stride after the All-Star break. You give them a couple weeks that they find that they're going, like, you know, they're hitting their stride, and then maybe these guys become buyers in those 2 weeks after the All-Star break. Instead of having to make these last-minute decisions coming back from the All-Star break, the guys aren't, you know, so fresh to the game. And I think that it could make a huge difference in the way that some teams, you know, play coming out of the All-Star break and the decisions that the GMs will make, whether the team will be a buyer or a seller.
Does it make any difference to a team to be able to see a player longer? In other words, let's say we make the trade deadline, August 15th. Now, technically at that point, you really only have about, 6 weeks left of the season. Because you figure it's wrapping up by the end of September. And many of those teams are pretty much, they've kind of wrapped things up by even, say, the third week of the season. or not the third week, but the by the fifth week of the season. So a lot of teams are just playing out the last week of their season, and well, we're not even going to play our starters. Who cares? Could that be a problem? You know, getting a guy in too late in the season. Nick, jump in on the whole thing. On what do you? I like the idea. I'll tell you why I like it. I like the idea of pushing it back. I'll tell you why I like it. One, it's controversial. Two, I haven't heard anybody else come up with it but me. What do you think, Dick?
I just don't see it as being necessary. I think, not that we haven't heard the idea before, but a lot of the push for it is because the season is so tight this year. I think if you push it back further, it's almost too late. I don't have a problem with it being right now. I mean, that's just it's part of the game. You got to make your decisions at some point. The further we push it back, the less purpose there is really to a trade deadline. And you bring up, is there any advantage to seeing a player longer? Or maybe, you know, there might be a Yankee scout at an extra two starts for Hamels. But now that's two starts to Hamels don't have this player. So all these rent-a players where you trade for half a season of a player and then his contract's over, I think you see a lot less of that because you're not going to mortgage as much for 6 weeks with Cole Hamels as you would for 2 months or Jonathan Papelbon or David Price or whoever it may be. You'll see less given for those run a player guys. But just overall, I don't see it as being necessary. It makes it easier for the front offices, I guess, because you have more time to see if you're a buyer or a seller. You have more time to see what these guys are actually worth, you know, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, is the goal to make it easy for the front office members, or is it to make it the best situation for baseball? Because I don't see this being technically or per se a bad idea to move it back. I just think it's the motivation behind it is kind of silly, because I think a lot of the motivation is, in fact, to just make it easier for front office members, to make it easier for GMs to say, yeah, we're a buyer, we're a seller, just give them more time. And then at the same time, I think another reason I see the changes being potentially silly is trade talks pick up in the last week of July. They really pick up, really, really pick up in the last week of July. A lot of deals are made on July 31st or within the 3 days prior. To push it back to August 15th, just hypothetically, I think those trade talks that happened at the end of July wouldn't happen. They just move to the week before the new deadline, and all the trades would happen then. So I think anybody that's arguing there's more time to make trades is right and wrong. But overall, just as a whole, I wouldn't be disgusted by the change exactly, but I've heard this time and time again now of late about moving the deadline back, and I just don't get it. I guess I just don't see the point. You guys can convince me. I'll be open to the idea. If you can really, really drive it home why it would really be helpful and better for baseball, I'd be willing to change my opinion about it. Just at the moment, I just don't have a strong enough opinion to say, yeah, it should be moved back.
Well, okay. Interesting point. Let me put it to you this way. My suggestion in potentially moving it back 2 weeks, and I'm going to be honest with you, I really haven't heard, but maybe I'm just reading the wrong trade publications, but I haven't heard really, I haven't heard too many people actually coming out and saying, move it back.
More so than in previous years.
In previous years you've heard it more? Okay. Well,
no, I'm saying more so this year than in previous years.
Okay.
I don't see it all over, but this year is really the first time I've really heard the idea.
One of the things that I'm bringing up about pushing it back is not to say, okay, look, we've got more time to make the trades, because I concur with you, Nick. Number one, people by nature are procrastinators. That's number one. Number two, if you're a good, smart general manager, you're going to hold out as long as possible, as I pointed out, to try to get as much value as you possibly can for something that might be coveted by another team. That's why there's so many trades right at the deadline.
Right.
So we know what the deal is. Pushing it back is not – my motivation would not be to, oh, it gives teams more time. My point is I'm trying to weed out and – allow for more teams to be sellers. See, when you've got 14, and see, here's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to be really curious, because when I close the program tonight, I'm going to go in and I'm going to write down the 14 teams, that I think that are buyers right now. And so I'm going to write them down right now. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back on whatever our show is after August 15th, and we're going to revisit this topic and see if those teams, those same 14 teams, would still be considered buyers at that point. You understand what I'm saying? That's
yes.
What I'm going after. Mm-hmm. I'm going after trying to weed out those teams that are still right now at this time buyers because of the fact there's not one wild card, there's two. That's what I'm trying to do. That's my objective. And again, I throw it out there. Anybody, if you want to come back at me.
I understand what you're saying, and I get it. And again, I'll reiterate, I'm not entirely opposed to the idea of moving the deadline back, because I do get where you're coming from, but I also simultaneously would say I think the weeding out the sellers makes it easier for the GMs, and not that that's a bad idea, but as a fan, part of the interest is sitting here and saying the Tigers, who've got some really good talent, are not necessarily in a great position, but aren't in a bad position. Are they going to be buyers or sellers? Which way is the GM going to go? And this is going to define how I analyze and evaluate this GM. This GM is good because he decided to buy or sell, or bad because he decided to buy or sell. And that's as a fan or even as an analyst. It's a interesting part of the business side of baseball.
Agreed.
I get both sides, and again, I just want to be clear. I really am not opposed to moving the deadline back, but I'm not for it. If I had a vote, I just wouldn't vote, and that sounds terrible because I always encourage people to vote. I encourage people to vote for the All-Star Game, president, whatever it may be, but I'm just so indifferent towards the idea that I don't think I have a strong enough opinion to keep it there or to move it ahead, or move it back, rather.
I couldn't agree with you more about the intrigue of the strategy that potentially could play out. And again, you're using your Detroit example there for a moment. You take a look at a team like Detroit. They're a 500 team. I said, I'm going to have to go back and check. I'll figure it out after the show's over and I write them down. But I don't believe I included Detroit in this list, because I'm looking at them, and while they're a 500 team, they're in third place, and they're 9.5 games right now out of first place because Kansas City's running away with it. However, you go up to the AL East, you got Tampa Bay, who's one game under 500, 47 and 48.
Five games back.
And only five games back. So you could have a Tampa Bay team that might be a buyer while you've got Detroit being a seller. And that's the interesting part of the strategy, and I concur with you. Now, that's what makes it interesting today on July 21st. It's going to be interesting when I go 3 weeks ahead and we go to August 15th and see how that looks at that point. Would Tampa Bay on August 15th still be potentially a buyer and Detroit being a seller? See, I think Detroit's a seller, and I think they're a seller not because of their record. I think they're a seller because of the division that they're in.
Right. I agree. I think it just a side note, I think if you're going to do that, it's going to be a little difficult because the decision they make on July 31st will decide what they're going to be on August 15th this year. But I understand if you're speaking in the hypothetical sense, if we were to give them till August 15th, I guess what you're saying is by that point, maybe the Rays are a seller and the Tigers are all set to buy. It gives them more time to flip-flop.
Damn it, Nick, you had to go and get logical on me.
I'm a math major. I'm trained to do that.
Oh, damn it.
I got
damn
all my tools and everything.
Well, a math major. Yeah, we a major in statistics? He's going to be a sabermetrician, damn it.
But, no, I think it's a really interesting idea, though. But regardless, if you were able to fairly evaluate the difference between July 31st and August 15th. I don't know if the Blue Jays being a seller and the Tigers being a buyer changes much, because now you still have the same number of buyers and sellers. And I know it's just a really small sample size of a hypothetical situation, but I think you're going to run into the same situation on any date you put the deadline. You know, it's kind of like in college basketball. You expand from however many teams to 64, then 64 to 68. Now, listen, you got guys in the bubble. Or in the NBA playoffs, teams are, like, right there. Do we want to expand? Do we want to just take the top 16 overall or 8 from each conference? You want a little bit more, a little bit more. Last year, Temple got robbed of March Madness, and if you expanded it just a little bit, they'd be in. That was the whole idea behind the second wild card. All these teams were right there, right there. So we expanded a little bit, and then they're in. But now we've got third-place wildcard teams that are right there. So I think it'd be a similar situation that if we do move the deadline back to August 15th, there's a good chance we run into the same problems, and we say, well, now we've got buyers and sellers. Let's see if we can weed them out even more and move back August 30th, September 15th, September 30th.
No trade deadline.
So I just, again, I don't think it's a terrible idea to move the deadline back, but I just don't think it's definitively going to solve any issues.
Now, I know that, let's say, we're at the 21st, and when the show comes on next week on the 28th, we'll still be before the trade deadline, so I'm sure there'll be some trade deadline talk at that point. But looking at where things stand at this moment, and I'll throw it open to both of you. We all have heard a lot of talk about who might be selling and who some of the hottest potential prospects might be out there right at the trade deadline. And I sent you over a couple of articles. I guess one was actually a little bit more recent than the other. I think one was actually came out in sometime in June. One actually came out at the beginning of the season as to who would be there at the trade deadline. And, well, it was just dotted with a whole load of Phillies. But throw it out there to both of you. Who do you think would be, at this point right now, who are the hottest names out there on the trade deadline?
A lot of Phillies. I'll put it that
way. Well,
we've already talked about it. Two of them. Yeah. I mean, Papelbon and Hamels.
Hamels, too. But I don't see Utley moving, and I don't see Ryan moving.
I just want to clarify. We're like talking specifically players, not teams, right?
Yeah, we're talking players. Players now, individuals.
Okay.
The trouble with Ryan Howard is trying to dump his contract at this point. I mean, like, he's not going to bring much to any team that
would take
him.
We'd have to pay.
I mean, yeah,
well,
exactly.
No, let's remember, if he got paid league minimum, he's still statistically the worst first baseman in the league.
It's not even a contract issue at this point. He's just a terrible player. I mean, like, there were some people that were saying, like, the first half of his season was going, like, not so badly at the plate, but, I mean, we're still seeing the same Ryan Howard, like, striking out way too many times, really not making up for it with his bat, like, when he does hit the ball.
Well,
so,
could there be a worse second baseman than Chase Utley right now?
I don't think there is.
And I mean,
would tell
for
you if
sake,
there is, it's
you,
the AL. It's Steven Drew, it's Eric Sogard, it's Omar Infante.
Okay, there you go. Rip Chase Utley off the trade list anyhow, because he's out injured. Despite the fact we're hearing this, oh, he's going to make a miraculous comeback thing. We're hearing this thing.
No, thanks. I don't want to hear it.
Mike, you know, it's interesting. It was just a few months ago that you had me on the show for the first time from spring training, and we were talking about how good Ryan Howard looked and about how he might have a revival season. And then it was not even that long ago, before the deadline, in the first half of the season, back in maybe May, we were talking about, Howard's looking real good, at least considering. And he's going to be real good trade bait, and we should get rid of him now. The Phillies should deal him now while he's valuable, while he's batting 250, 260 with 10 home runs early in the season and however many RBIs, while he's producing. And they held on to him, and you can't blame them. I mean, most trades aren't going to be made in May. Like you said, great GMs will hold out. But now all of a sudden he hasn't hit many more home runs, which is interesting because we're getting into the heat of the year. As Charlie Manuel would say, it's hitting season. His average has dropped down, I think it's below 220 now. It's been horrendous, and all of a sudden in addition to the $25 million contract, Sean, that you mentioned, he can't hit either. It's not even like you're just overpaying a player that's going to produce, you're just paying him a little too much. You want the Phillies to eat some of the contract. At this point, it's not even worth paying him $10 million. The Phillies have to eat almost the entire contract because he's going to go somewhere and he's going to be a six-hitter, a seven-hitter, an eight-hitter.
I mean, it's crazy
how quickly he fell off.
Ryan Howard's batting average is actually less than Galvis?
Yeah. Freddie Galvis got one of the highest averages on the team again. He's been up and down all year.
I haven't looked at Ryan Howard's average lately. I haven't looked at Ryan Howard lately, I'll be honest with you. But holy smokes.
He's up. He brought it way up. He's up to a whopping 227.
Oh, my. Well, that's about – the last I looked at Galvis, I think that's about where he was around 227, wasn't he? 238, maybe?
Galvis obviously was looking real, real good, fell apart, kind of fell down. I think he's been hitting again, though, of late. His average to date is 271, so he's up around 270.
Oh, my goodness. How is that? Oh, wow.
I think he's a player on the Phillies that has gotten absolutely – or close to zero mention when it comes to trade discussion, but I think he's a player they can move for somebody, and I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I'm not opposed to anything right now on the team. But look at this. Let's do this, because I don't want to sound too much like a homer, because we talked a lot about the Phils. Let's look around the league. And you just rattled off a bunch of names there, Nick. One of the names, though, that I keep hearing brought up, of course, And I don't know. I mean, are we saying this is the hottest name? Johnny Cueto is coming up in everybody's conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It would seem that guy's got to be number one, I guess, on the list. A couple of weeks ago, I don't know what the status of some of these guys are because unfortunately, I don't cover every single team 24/7. I am covering other sports over here. Scott Kazmir was being bantered about. Are we still? I haven't heard Kazmir's name brought up recently.
I don't know if he's on the same level as Johnny Cueto, but I think he's a name you can expect to at least be discussed in the final days of July.
Okay. What were some of the other names that you had thrown out there?
Well, one of the ones that I think one guy who's a big-name player and a guy that's very likely to be moved, in my opinion at least, Justin Upton from the Padres, I think he's going to be moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then a name that maybe isn't as discussed because he's not as great of a player, but a very valuable player to a team because he plays so many positions, Ben Zobrist from Oakland. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go. You mentioned Johnny Cueto. We mentioned the entire Phillies roster. I think hitting wise, Justin Upton is maybe the top commodity on the market right now.
Chapman, I hear.
Chapman, he's another one. He's another one. Yes.
Yep. All right. Well, we're gonna be following it as we go along. I hate to keep coming back to the Phils, but. We've already said, number one, we think Papelbon probably will be gone by, August 1 at the very latest. He's not on the roster. Cole Hamels, on the roster or not on the roster?
If you would have asked me a week ago, I would have said on the roster because I think the way they were going, at least from what I saw and what I understood, was that they were going to wait until the offseason and let McPhail kind of hold the ropes on this, which I wouldn't have had a problem with. And I've been saying for weeks now, I think Cole Hamels is one of those players that unless you get 100% of what you want in return, you just hold on to him. You don't sell him short because there's no there's no real urgency to not have him on the roster or to trade him or to get anything in return because he's an established ace. He's not really going to lose value unless he goes down with some serious injury. Even after these last two starts, I mean, Johnny Cueto had a bad outing the last game, and I forget which AL team it was, but some executive said he was asked, is there anything to worry about in Cueto's last start? And he said, yes, everything. So Cueto's a little more shaky, but a guy like Hamels, who now two bad outings in a row, I don't think there's really been any interest loss. I think talks have heated up. But now, from what I'm hearing and all these teams that are really interested, the Astros jumped in, the Rangers jumped in, the Dodgers jumped in all really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing he's not going to be moved because there's just such a push for him. And as we get closer and closer, Mike, like you said, the great GM will hold out. As we get, you know, maybe by next week's show on the 28th, the 29th, the 30th, even the 31st, somebody's going to give in. The Red Sox are going to offer Swihart and Betts if they decide to be buyers. The Dodgers are going to give in and maybe give up, something Arias. The Rangers might give in and give up not Joey Gallo, but one of their top prospects. The Astros might give in and give up a major league ready player. With all these teams interested and talks already as hot as they are right now, I think if you give it another 10 days, somebody's going to cave and somebody's going to say, no, we really want him. We really want him for the back half of the season, not even just the future, just this season, because we really think we have a chance. And we'll give you him. Just please give us Cole Hamels. And I think that's hard to deny when somebody is that enthusiastic about it and says, yeah, we'll give you what you want. We'll give it to you. We really want him. I don't see them saying no.
And I think that's the biggest point from what I understand is the fact that I've heard talk of people saying that the Phillies have Cole Hamels priced too high and that they need to bring the price of Cole Hamels down. And I don't think that's true.
I agree.
Like, he's one of the best. He's an ace. No matter where he goes, he's going to be an ace. So I don't think you need to take down the price of Cole Hamels. I think you need to leave him right where he is and wait for that team that's going to shell out to have him because they just need to have him. And, I mean, as far as whether he's going to be on the team or not, I think it's, like, really hard to say. I mean, it's been, you know, it's been years in the talk of Cole Hamels leaving the team by the trade deadline, and it hasn't happened yet. But I think some team at some point is going to have to give in and take Cole Hamels. I think it's going to happen. And whether it happens this year, I guess we'll see in a week and a half. I mean, it's hard for me to judge whether it's going to happen or not because there's been so many years where there's been talk of Cole Hamels leaving, but people just weren't willing to give up what the Phillies wanted for him. So to see if it happens this year, we'll just have to wait.
You bring up a good point, Sean. We've been hearing about Cole Hamels moving out of the Philadelphia region. Guys, I was hearing about it in preseason. And we have lived with this all year long. And in some respects, it's kind of a shame for Cole Hamels because he's lived with it all year long. And this isn't the first time he's heard trade talks about himself from this team in his career here in Philadelphia. You know, if I were Cole Hamels and ultimately I get moved to another team, I may turn my back on Philadelphia and never look back on him again. Because I think in some respects, I don't know if we have treated him. And when I say we, I don't mean we as fans, but we in the Phillies organization really have treated him all that well. That's just my personal opinion. They have hung him out there as trade bait so many seasons in a row now, and there has been so much talk and so much speculation. As I pointed out, not just recently, but it seems like season after season after season. And I don't know. I think it's wrong. But
you're absolutely right. If you remember last off season or last season, they said, no, we'll wait till the off season to trade him, and they didn't. Then they said, we'll wait till the deadline to trade him, and they didn't. And if he doesn't get moved, then they said, we'll wait till the off season. What reason does Cole Hamels have to trust him?
Mm. Yeah, and this is also a guy, he's played in Philly his whole career and has never showed an interest in leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, he's never, unlike Papelbon, Hamels has never come out and said that he's wanted to be traded from the Phillies.
Absolutely.
So, like, he's a hometown guy. Like, he's wanted to play here. And here's the front office dangling him like a worm in front of a fish, like, trying to get someone to take the bait. And it hasn't worked out for him. And, I mean, I don't think it's right.
And it feels like it's constant that they're always doing it. And I don't know. Like I said, I just All right, anyhow. Before we get out of here tonight, let's get over and take a look at our little in-house game that we've been playing here. And it has gotten, continues to get a little bit competitive and tight as we go through the season here. Week 15 went down last week, and currently in our series streak challenge, Nick, you're still holding the lead over there at 9 wins and 6 losses. I'm kind of quietly sneaking up on you. I've got 8 wins and 7 losses. Caleb is 7 and 8. Sean is 6 and 9. And so here we go. We're going to make our picks for this week. We're picking a team we believe to win a complete series. Caleb, look, he's not here, so I can trash him. I think he went a little cheap. he's picking the Orioles over the Rays. But that's okay. I'll let him get away with it. Caleb's got the Orioles over the Rays. I'm going to defer to Sean. Sean, since you're in the basement there, go ahead, make your pick.
Hoping for a win this week with the Red Sox over the Tigers.
Red Sox. Over, yeah, I looked at that series as well. I walked away from it. Go ahead, Nick.
I'm hoping. I'm holding out.
I got a four-game series here.
Our leader, Nick, go ahead.
Love it. I got a four-game series here. I'm trying to hopefully going to steal one here. Two bad teams playing, but I'm going to take the Brewers over the Diamondbacks. I think they're both equally as bad, but the Brewers are a little hotter. The Brewers are actually a little worse, but a little hotter right now. So hopefully they can roll through a four-game series here, and I can stay on top as you guys are right on my tail. I'm getting a little nervous. Got to be honest, getting a little nervous. But Brewers over D-backs.
I looked at that series as well, and I was close to picking exactly as you did there because, as we saw, Arizona's been kind of dropping off recently. I went out of my comfort zone, and I went with a four-game series as well. I was actually a little bit surprised that Caleb didn't take this one. I'm going to go with the Pirates over the Nationals, and that is a four-game series. So there you have it. I'm going with Pirates over the Nationals, and you can catch all of our picks, folks. You can catch that. I'll have it up over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Well, within minutes after the program is concluded here, get over to Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between for our little purple icon, and give us a like over there. Listen, make sure you're back here with us on Thursday evening for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, coming you with our number 202nd show in a row. Holy smokes. 202. 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Don't know what the lineup is going to be exactly yet, but hold on here a moment. I'll give you an idea of some of the people that I sent invites out to. I sent an invite out to Vince Papale, Johnny Hecker, who is currently the kicker over at the St. Louis Rams, and Matt Prater. How about that? Yeah, well, that's who I sent invites out to. So we'll see what we get. But you're going to want to be here for that program, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then Saturday I'll be back here with you for another relaxed Frat House Saturday program. Hey, guys, thanks very much for jumping in here. Always, you guys do a great job. Enjoy bringing our baseball program to you here every single week. For all of us here at Frat House Sports, what can I tell you? Hey, listen, get out there. Enjoy your baseball.